I'm on the phone right now with Adam Avery, the founder of Avery Brewing. And Adam, welcome to BeerAmerica.tv.
Thanks, Paul.
I think you're really interesting. We've done two beers of yours so far and probably do many more down the road. We did the Avery 15 and Collaboration and Not Litigation. How would you describe somebody who doesn't know Avery Brewing? I guess how would you describe your style?
Well, you know, I'll talk about the segments that you did on our beers, especially the 15. I love that segment because you guys were looking into your glass and didn't have a. You would say some things, but you could tell that you were kind of mystified by what the hell was going on with that beer. And that's kind of, you know, where we are with the styles of beers that we like to produce here. Is, you know, we're not looking to stick, you know, to certain style segment or style guidelines. Obviously, certainly we make some beers that are of certain styles, but you know, the things that we're known for, that kind of the notoriety that we get, are from beers that are, you know, past styles. I think it's more just flavor-driven beers, and that's what we're into. Is just, you know, we're looking to have as much flavor as we can in a bottle of beer, and experiment, and you know, and see where the, you know, what the boundaries of beer are, and that's you know, that's kind of where we're headed. And you know, we've been in business for 15 years. And you know, the beer that kind of, you know, that set us apart back in 1998 was when we started making Hog Heaven barley wine. And perfect example of, you know, a beer that, you know, is it the right style? You know, people are like, that's a double IPA. And I'm like, you know, when we started making it, there were no double IPAs, or, you know, very few. And so, you know, we called it a barley wine. And, you know, basically that was, that's the beer that kind of set us on our course of, you know, making big, you know, strongly flavored beers, you know, in some cases very hoppy beers, some cases very malty beers, higher alcohol beers. But, you know,
I think
so it kind of remains, you know, dear to the heart, basically.
And I think 15 is another good example. If I could just elaborate on that, you know, we don't rate beers on BeerAmerica.tv because I think taste is subjective. But, you know, that beer mystified me. And I thought, and that was a good thing. I can't say that I was a big fan of it, but I was glad that we did it, because it's like, as a lover of American craft beer, it was a beer I had not tasted before. And in that way, it was wonderful. I mean, it really was marvelous what you had put into that beer, and the flavors that there was. It was very complex.
Well, I mean, we took a huge risk. Believe me, I thought long and hard about, you know, how we were going to make this beer. We had originally thought that maybe we would use a Duvel yeast strain and then finish it off with a Brett, and to create some Brett flavor, but, you know, have more of like a Belgian, you know, estuary note to it. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, as we were, you know, building the beer, we did 100% Brett beer first, and we were like, man, you know, everybody at the brewery was like, we really, really liked the beer. Like, we were like, oh my God, this is awesome. But then again, we're a bunch of beer, you know, geeks, and, you know, we like crazy flavors too. So we were, you know, hesitant to throw it out, because, I mean, in reality, Paul, like, this beer, I've been talking to guys in the industry, you know, like, you know, Tommy Arthur and Vinny Chalizo and some Belgian guys. And I'm like, you know, what's the biggest, you know, batch of 100% Brett beer that's ever been made? You know, typically they're 20, 30, maybe 40 barrel batches. We made 400 barrels of this stuff and shipped it to 34 states and Denmark and Sweden as well. So, I mean, we kind of just said, you know, screw it. We're going to see what the American public thinks about something that's, you know, completely unique. And that's what we tried to build. I mean, not only was it 100% Brett, but, you know, we used hibiscus flowers, some white pepper, and some Black Mission figs as well. And, you know, which created just like this really weird, you know, like, people are like, it's a little bit bitter. And I'm like, that's not bitterness, because there's almost no hops in it. So
right.
the IBU kind of sensation comes from that white pepper, and a little bit from the hibiscus too, because we used a lot, so it became kind of spicy. But you really noted the hibiscus, you know, right off the bat, and definitely, you know, the hibiscus is pretty dominant, along with, you know, those horsey, you know, barnyard kind of flavors from the Brett strain that we used.
Well, I would recommend anybody to try it, especially those who love American craft beer, because, again, the uniqueness of it is fantastic. I mean, it really is.
It goes really well with turkey. I know that it's past Thanksgiving, but that's what I had with it. You know, because it's dry, you know, that
mm-hmm.
the hibiscus really dries the beer out. Plus, it's got a low finishing gravity. So, you know, it really has some, you know, some really dry white wine characteristics to it as well. So if you like into, you know, drinking white wine, there's definitely some flavors there that would, you know, that would cross. crossover.
And for those and like myself who not long ago didn't know what this is, explain what Brett is real quick.
Brettanomyces is basically a wild yeast strain. So Saccharomyces is the genus of yeast that all brewers use basically to create their ales, and they're designed to ferment and to give good flavor. So they've been, you know, mutated throughout the years to create certain flavors in a beer, and those are esters, and some phenols as well. Like in a Belgian beer, you get, like, you know, these sometimes some medicinal and, you know, peppery phenols that come off of it. Well, with Brettanomyces, that's a wild yeast strain, and they haven't been cultured to produce beer, but, you know, Brettanomyces is everywhere in the air, so you could put out a bunch of wort, just like the Belgian goose producers do, put out wort overnight, let it be inoculated overnight by the night air and all the wild yeast that's in it, and then, you know, you get a fermentation, usually slower because you're not pitching as much. But we used a Brett strain that we found, and we've been playing with it for, you know, about a year, and you know, it creates these, you know, really, you know, this kind of horse blanket, barnyardy kind of flavors, and it's mostly an aroma thing. Mm-hmm. And one of the misnomers is that a lot of people think that Brett always produces, you know, a sour beer, and that's not necessarily the case. So a lot of times you have to have lactopedio in there to create sourness, mm-hmm, in a beer. So ours was a very pure strain. So like we got the Brett that we liked, then we grew it up under lab conditions so that we had a pitchable. So we treated it as Saccharomyces. So there's no other, you know, bacteria in there to create it. Now the Brett will create a little bit of acetic acid, so there is a slight sourness, but the sourness, and I think you guys really got this on your segment on the 15, was that it's more apparent in the aroma than it is in the flavor profile. So Brett is it's a wild yeast strain.
And elaborate a little bit, explain what the Brett pack is.
The Brett pack, well, we were, so who named us that? Dick Cantwell from Elysian Brew Company wrote an article a few years ago about Tommy Arthur from Port Brewing Company, Vinny Chalizo from Russian River Brewing Company, Rob Todd from Allagash, and Sam Calagione from Dogfish, and myself. We went to Belgium almost 3 years ago, and we did this tour and, you know, had a great time visiting breweries, and we were going to basically goose producers. And he got wind that, you know, Dick, we're friends with Dick too, and so he found out about the story. He found out about the trip, and so he wrote this story, and he defined us as the Brett Pack, so we all had our, you know, our portion of the Brett Pack, and you know, it's just silliness, but, you know, that's...
But it has, in today's brewing, you know, an interesting thing is happening, and since all of your brewers are getting together, talk a little bit about what's going on with collaboration.
Oh, yeah, I mean, just to finish that story off, I mean, those guys are my best friends in the industry, so it's really cool to be able to bounce ideas off of them, and obviously those names, I think a lot of your viewers will know those names and know that, you know, I feel pretty privileged to be in that group with those guys, because what they do, you know, we all have kind of our specialty and what we like to do. You know, some of us are, you know, more into, you know, hoppy beers or higher alcohol beers, and then, you know, Tommy's more into, you know, the sour side and the Brett side probably. But, you know, it's a great group. And I'm sorry, what was your question?
The collaboration that's going on right now seems to be a really hot trend.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's great. It's, you know, I don't think you'd see this in any other industry, and I think that just goes to show you, you know, what kind of, you know, the cool factor in the industry. As Sam Calagione says, you know, our industry is 99% asshole free, and you know, it is true. Most of the guys in the industry are in it to make great beer. There's a lot of camaraderie. I mean, we're all doing the same thing, and so, you know, we get along. So, you know, we did a collaboration brew, Collaboration Not Litigation. You guys did a segment on that. We did that with Vinny. We started that a couple years ago, and now, you know, there's a lot of people doing it, and I think it's fun, you know. People, you know, obviously you gravitate towards certain breweries because you probably make like-minded beers, and then you meet the owner, and then you're like, oh yeah, you know, you hit it off, you become friends, and you're like, you know, what can we do, you know, have, you know, to have even more fun, and it's like, yeah, let's build a beer together, or let's blend two of our beers together, and you know, now people are doing it with people in Belgium, you know, or, you know, I guess in Denmark as well, so it's pretty neat part of the business.
Yeah, absolutely, and. Let me talk about that a little bit. How is the American craft brew segment different than what's going on in the rest of the world? I mean, is it just that the American craft brewers can kind of think more outside the box and break away from tradition?
I think that that is definitely what's going on, because even in, you know, let's think about the country that's probably influenced the Brett Pack, or, you know, probably a lot of brewers in America the most is Belgium. And, you know, and they do make some really crazy beers. I mean, they have Goose, you know, they have, you know, triples, doubles and stuff. But all those breweries are basically making the same beer, you know, for, you know, 100 years, 200 years, 400. I mean, you know, some of the abbeys have been making beer for obviously, you know, centuries. And, you know, some of those abbeys, like Orval, make one beer, you know. So, yeah, and but while Orval is like one of my top five beers, you know, in the world for me personally, and it is kind of a crazy beer because it has a Brettanomyces finish to it, and it's fairly hoppy for the style. But, you know, that brewery is making one beer. So, you know, it's not super crazy. In America, you know, I think we're influenced because we are a melting pot already. So, you know, we have, you know, German roots. We've got, you know, Belgian roots. We've got English roots. So you've got all this, you know, on all these beers that have been imported to America, and I think that's probably the biggest part of it. Is like when I was growing up, when I was going to college in the 80s, you know, imports were becoming hot. So, you know, even in high school, even before that, in the early 80s, when I was, you know, I was drinking, you know, Moosehead was there, Heineken was there, you know, Newcastle was there. You know, there's things coming into the country, and you're like, oh man, this isn't, you know, Budweiser, which is what I've been drinking, you know, or, you know, Stag or Falstaff or whatever. Mm-hmm. I was drinking in Illinois, right, growing up. You know, these are different beers. And I think the same thing happened to a lot of other, you know, brewers. Then, you know, you become home brewers, and then when you're home brewing, obviously, you know, you don't have to worry about anything except pleasing yourself and maybe a couple of your friends. So you got a bunch of crazy home brewers, you know, going off in the 80s and late 80s, and, you know, mixing up all sorts of concoctions, and then, you know, some of us crazies decide that, you know, we can actually maybe try to make a living at this, start breweries, and, you know, and here we are, you know, whatever, we're, you know, I'm in 15 years, you know, most of the guys are in at least that long.
When you brew and when you come up with an idea, do you think about food pairings right away, or does that come after the fact?
Oh, no, that definitely is after the fact. Like, when I build a beer, like, I'm thinking of, you know, I get influenced by other people's beers. You know, I have a beer, and I think, oh, this is good. I like this. I like this. And I'm like, I want to make a beer that's, you know, similar to that, or maybe a blend of, you know, a few different kinds of beers. And then, you know, I just go from there. And, you know, the food will follow for sure.
And it's important, right, beer and food. And talk a little bit about the Avery experience.
Well, the Avery experience is not necessarily a food pairing. The Avery experience is
a beer.
It's a beer experience. Mm-hmm. I mean, we sit down, we do five flights of three different beers, so we do 15 beers total, and we start with, you know, three of our normal, quote, normal beers, typically, you know, IPA, White Rascal, Ellie's, just get people involved, and then we go, you know, to our stronger beers until, you know, the last flight where we have all the demons, and, you know, by that time, you know, I've kind of lost the crowd because they've, you know, had a little bit to drink, but that's the Avery experience. Beer dinners that I've done, though, have been awesome because we do offer such a huge lineup of beers. Chefs love to work with us because, you know, it's pretty easy to come up with, you know, a food pairing for the beers. And what we try to do, the beer dinners that I do, I try to have two very dissimilar beers matched up with the same course to show the diversity of, you know, beer versus, like, say, you know, what I call, I love wine, I'm not dissing wine, but I think that you're kind of pigeonholed into what you can serve with certain kinds of wine, where I don't think that you're so pigeonholed with beer, because with beer you can make so many different styles because you're working with more ingredients, right? So, you know, you can work with hops, but, you know, within hops you've got hundreds of varieties of hops that will produce anything from, you know, really earthy flavors to, you know, that grapefruit, you know, citrusy kind of flavors. So, you know, even, you know, different people's IPAs can match up with a lot of different kinds of foods, you know, based on just what kind of hop they use.
Sure. Now, let me ask you, and I love asking this question of all the featured brewers, have you ever come up with an idea and actually put it together and go, oh my God, this tastes like total hell? I mean, has that ever happened to you before?
It has.
Like, what ingredient does not work in beer?
What ingredient does not work in beer?
I mean, have you had a situation like that? I guess the reason why I asked the question is Sam Calagione had said that he tried brewing a beer with peppercorns and it tasted like total dog shit.
Well, but the thing is that I had a peppercorn beer that I thought was awesome.
Yep.
What's called a Deo du Ciel from Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
And JF, he made a beer that I thought was fantastic. I mean, but it was, you know, it was heavily peppercorn. I don't think that there's, I mean, I guess it's up to the individual. I don't prefer like chili pepper beers. But, you know, I've had some that I go, oh, you know, if I liked chili pepper beers, this would be probably a great chili pepper beer. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that there's really anything that, you know, you could make that would be just like, oh, this is awful. I mean, it comes down to what you like.
Where do you see yourself? I mean, where are you, what are you heading towards, Adam? I mean, have you got like what does the future hold for Avery?
Well, I mean, we talk about this all the time at the brewery, and you know, we always come back to the same thing: is you know, we're going to continue to make the beers that we want to make, you know, how we want to make them, and hope that we can find people who share our passion and share our taste buds, and hope that we can grow. That's what it's all about. So we'll continue to make the beers that we love, find the markets that can support us. And you know, however big we get, you know. So there's no ultimate game plan. I'm a terrible businessman in the fact that you know I really don't, you know, I'm not a numbers guy, you know. I'm not into, you know, oh, and here's our 5-year plan, because you know our market is so, you know, it's volatile. I mean, we have a growing industry, which is great, and we hope to be, you know, on the, you know, the top end of, you know, the creative breweries who are, you know, bringing out, you know, weird stuff that, you know, some people are going to say, like 15, for example. That was a love it or hate it beer. I mean, I got some hate mail. You know, I probably got equal amount of people who said that I was freaking crazy to make a beer that tasted like that, and then equal amount of people who emailed and said, I can't believe that you had that. First of all, it's a great beer, blah, 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 but you had the balls to put out something that was, you know, so different. And so, you know, where are we going? You know, hopefully we continue to grow like we have. I mean, we've had huge growth years. I mean, for the last 7 years, we've grown at least 30%. This year, our sales are up dollar-wise, up 49%, on a volume growth of about 25%. So, you know, things are good, and we're gonna, you know, keep riding that wave, and hope that people will continue to support us, and you know, support, you know, craft beer as a whole.
Is distribution a problem for you out in Colorado and craft beers alone? I mean, your name, you're one of the bigger players in the craft beer industry, but do you find that distribution is easier or getting easier for you?
Well, I wouldn't say that we're one of the bigger players. I mean, we're still small, and I think that there's a misperception about, you know, how big we are because we are in a lot of markets. I always say we sell a little bit of beer in a lot of places, and it's because of the styles that we produce, you know. So we're going to do 17,000 – or, well, no, wait, we're going to do about 16,000 barrels this year, which it puts us, like, you know, microbreweries or any brewery from 0 barrels to 15,000 barrels. So now we're into the regional category. But, you know, New Belgium, which is just up the road, my pals up there, they're going to do almost 500,000 barrels this year. You know, Odell's, which is, you know, up the road, is probably going to do 45,000 or 50,000 barrels. So we're relatively small for a microbrewery or for a craft brewer. But I think what we do have is that we probably have maybe a little bit more name recognition because we are in more states.
And let me ask you, since we're recording this around the holiday time, what would be some of your beer suggestions, Avery beer suggestions for holidays? And is there a specific beer that you would drink on New Year's Eve instead of champagne?
You know, personally, I would drink, if there's still 15 out there, I think 15 would be a great, you know, way to bring in the New Year instead. But, you know, there's so many, you know, opportunities for people, you know, especially, you know, for after dinner drinks, or, you know, I know people are out there smoking cigars after dinner or something. You know, the Demon Series works so well, you know, as an after dinner drink. Hog Heaven is like probably the best cigar bar or cigar beer that I've ever had. But as a, you know, champagne, you know, if that would be, you know, Salvation is a very, you know, effervescent, you know, mm-hmm. golden ale. Belgian Golden Ale, that would be, you know, and very spritzy, so that would be a great, you know, champagne replacement as well.
So sort of off topic of beer, I like to ask these questions so that people get to know kind of what kind of a person you are. What's your favorite movie?
My favorite movie? It's A Wonderful Life.
Really? Okay.
Yep.
And, like, what kind of music? If you have an iPod, what kind of music is on your iPod?
I think, well, my favorite band's Radiohead, but, you know, I listen to everything. You know, I grew up in the 80s, so obviously, you know, the Smiths, Cure, you know, mm-hmm. U2, you know, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I'm a big Radiohead fan, but I like big band, I like jazz, you know, I like a lot of different genres.
Is there something, is there a question that I didn't ask you that maybe you'd want people to know about Avery or about you? Something that, you know, I'm sure you get asked a lot of the same type questions. I just was curious if there's always something, the producer in me says, is there something that, you know, nobody ever asks you that you'd like people to know about you?
Well, it's not that nobody ever asks, but, you know, I love it when people do ask me, hey, how'd you get your start, you know? And,
yep.
You know, most people say the same thing, and my profession. You know, I was a home brewer, and, you know, I decided I wanted to take, you know, my hobby and make it a profession. And one day, my mom actually was hearing this spiel, and she called bullshit on it, and she said, Adam, that's not how it started. And so that Christmas, she gave me a blown-up framed photo of a 8-month-old baby with a Pilsner glass in his hand, tipping back a beer, sitting on his uncle's lap, and of course that baby was me. So, you know, my love for beer began at a super early age, and my parents definitely fostered that, and they had a very European attitude towards my beer drinking, and so I'm pretty happy, and thankful that they had that kind of attitude. And you do that today, it's not politically correct, and probably get thrown in jail, but. Whatever.
Oh no, I think you and I are around the same age, and there's always that picture of us and kids in the 70s where our parents let us finish off that last drop of Schlitz or whatever it was they were drinking back then.
Well, for us it was my grandfather's beer was Stag and Falstaff. Yeah. So I grew up in Central Illinois. Those are the beers that were most drank, that's for sure.
Well, Adam, thank you so much for doing this interview for BeerAmerica.tv.
Sure, my pleasure. Thanks, Paul.